From the Schmoes No Network Studios in Los Angeles, California, it's time for Profiles with your hosts, Alicia Malone and Scott Mance.
Yeah! Hello, Schmoville! Welcome to the very first episode of Profiles with Malone and Mance. I'm Malone, Alicia Malone.
And I'm Mance, Scott Mance, Movie Mance. And we are so excited every week on Profiles. We are going to be spotlighting our favorite filmmakers, the greatest filmmakers of all time, by our choice, with a little help from you. And this is a show where every week we're going to have analysis, a little debate, some trivia, fun tidbits, picking our favorite scenes, counting down our favorite movies by these filmmakers, actors and actresses, and we're going to have a special surprise in every show.
I'm so excited, and we are starting with a bang with one of the best filmmakers in the world, Steven Spielberg.
Now, why of all people did we choose Spielberg? It was like you and I just looked at each other and just said, it's got to be Spielberg.
Yeah, we're often on the same wavelength, but we were definitely on the same wavelength with this because Spielberg has made a ton of movies. So first, there's some great stuff to talk about. But I just love with Spielberg how there seems to be two of him. There's the fun adventure kind, and then there's the harrowing war kind. But no matter which kind you get of Spielberg, he always transports you to another time and place.
Absolutely, no question about it. And I feel like we grew up with Spielberg movies. And definitely watching his evolution as a filmmaker, going from E.T. and Raiders of the Lost Ark to The Color Purple and Empire of the Sun to Schindler's List and Munich. His evolution as a filmmaker is just astounding.
And to help us with our first segment, so we're trying to call all our segments by the titles of some very popular movies, some of our favorite movies. So the first segment is called
It's a Wonderful Life.
And it takes a look at some of the personal life of Steven Spielberg. And to do this, we enlisted the dulcet tone of the pit boss.
The
so Jete, you got that video ready? Let's roll it.
Steven Allen Spielberg was born on December 18, 1946 in Cincinnati, Ohio. He's one of the finest directors in motion picture history, and he's the most successful filmmaker of all time. The first movie he ever saw was The Greatest Show on Earth, which his father Arnold took him to see when he was just 5 years old. 11 years later, he wrote and directed his first movie, What Were You Doing at 16? It was a 140-minute sci-fi flick called Firelight. It cost $500 to make, and it ended up with a profit of just $1. But undeterred, Spielberg plowed on. The films he's directed since have grossed more than $8.5 billion worldwide. And he has three Academy Awards sitting on his mantle. In 1991, he married Kate Capshaw, whom he had met while filming 1984's Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. There are seven children in the Spielberg-Capshaw family. Spielberg is also the godfather of Drew Barrymore and Gwyneth Paltrow. Paltrow calls him Uncle Morty.
Aww.
Isn't that sweet?
I could listen to the Pit Boss all day.
Pit Boss rocks.
He rocks. And you know, he's on a great show called The Jedi Alliance, which is all about Star Wars. And on that show, they talk about their first time, their first experience with Star Wars. So we thought we would do something similar, but we're going to call it
First Blood.
Yeah, so the first Spielberg movie we ever saw. So mine was E.T. Now, I was too young to see it in cinemas, so I think I was about 5 or 6 or maybe even later. I can't remember the details, but all I remember is just feeling a sense of awe. It was so magical to me. The alien, I really related to Elliot and his story. And even now, I still get that same feeling as I did before.
Absolutely. And you know what? Now that I think about it, the way she is now, you are like an Australian version of Drew Barrymore.
Hey, I love Drew Barrymore, so I will take that.
Yes,
what was your first Spielberg movie?
My first Spielberg movie, which I saw in the theaters on November 16th, 1977, when it came out, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Now, this was, what, 5 or 6 months after Star Wars?
Yeah.
So, 77 was a really good year for science fiction, but I just remember seeing it with my dad. So, there's the nostalgia factor, there's the sentimental factor, but this was a movie that just had so many emotions that I still feel to this day, but that was the first. That was number one for me.
Well, Jete is in the control room. He is pushing all the buttons. And Jete, I know you love Spielberg as well, so can you tell us what was your first Spielberg movie?
Yeah, the funny story about that is I remember having to call my mom to get permission to see Jaws 4.
Yeah. Oh, Jaws 4?
Yeah, it was like the first Jaws movie I ever saw. And I think it was rated R, so I had to get my parents' permission.
Yeah.
And it was so bad, but as a kid, I didn't really know. I kind of liked it. And then that's it, and I went back and I saw Jaws. Because I saw the fourth one. I had to see the first one, and I absolutely loved it. I never swam after that, but I loved it.
And you're like, that's how it should be. Yeah. First one.
Yeah, you got to see the first one much better than the fourth one. So Schmoville, if you're listening out there, make sure you tweet us at Alicia Malone or at Movie Mance. Tell us, what was your first Spielberg movie, your first blood? But now, Mance, should we kick off our special segment?
Special segment, which we like to call
Fast Five, which, okay, we know isn't such a great movie,
it's
but it's just a title to sum up our five favorite Spielberg movies. We'll be counting them down from 5 to 1 throughout this show. So the first one we're starting with at number 5, Jeté, play the song.
Have
love
those
that.
Five notes. You got to do it with the hand too.
Do 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 do. I still haven't learned that. We're talking about Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Now, Scott, I know this is your favorite Spielberg film. You're representing here today.
Representing here with the T-shirt, which I actually got at Devil's Tower in Wyoming.
Yes.
Made the pilgrimage last year, last April, and I got to tell you, because this was my first Spielberg movie, it is my favorite Spielberg movie. Mm-hmm. It encompasses so many emotions. It's intense, suspenseful. It is terrifying. The scene where Barry is abducted
Barry.
By the aliens. Barry!
Barry!
Barry! And then Melinda Dillon is chasing after him. But there's also a lot of humor. There's a lot of heart. And this is a movie that is sublime. It is a beautiful film.
I just rewatched this the other night and I still love it, even though some of the effects doesn't look as good these days as it did. But it's the story that keeps you there. It's got so many iconic moments. The mashed potato. Five notes that we heard before. And you know, this is one of two movies that Spielberg has sole writing credit on. Now, he worked with a lot of writers and it went through a lot of different title changes. It was in project, it was in pre-production for years, since the early 70s. Finally came out in 77 as Close Encounters. And the thing that I love about this was it was one of the first sci-fi films, the first alien films, to actually show the aliens to be peace-loving beings and not warmongers. The scene with the conversation with the music is
brilliant.
So brilliant.
It's just so brilliant. I just love the way Close Encounters depicted first contact as intelligent, as beautiful. We come in peace. We are not alone. Up to that point, most alien movies were like War of the Worlds.
Yeah, terrifying right to the end. But
absolutely.
This one has such a sweet message. Although Spielberg says, if he made the movie today, he would change the ending.
He would have changed the ending. It's a good thing he'd made it when he did, because the fact that Roy Neary went off on the alien ship. I loved it. And this movie was nominated for 9 Oscars. It won 2, obviously, for sound effects and editing. And he was nominated for Best Director back in 77 for this movie.
Well, I remember distinctly the poster from Close Encounters, the mountain and the mothership.
Right
and
behind it.
Spielberg does really great movie posters. So you and I, we've picked our top 3. And once again, we enlisted the voice.
The pit boss
the
himself.
Pit boss. Take it away, Jeté.
What's a great movie without a great movie poster? Spielberg has loads to choose from, starting with Raiders of the Lost Ark. How's this for a pedigree? The poster proclaims it's from the creators of Jaws and Star Wars. But that face and the fedora sealed the deal. A grizzled Harrison Ford is one of the greatest movie heroes of all time. Trust him. How about this bold, beautiful one-sheet for E.T.? No images of the alien or Elliot. No spoilers here. Just this poetic connection inspired by Michelangelo's The Creation of Adam. But Spielberg's best poster belongs to his first big hit. Look at the size of that thing. That shark. Those teeth. Jaws. Terrifying book. Terrifying movie. And just as important, terrifying poster.
And this is a terrifying face. This is
we
me.
We like to call it
Jawsing! Ah, Maud Garrett from Jedi Alliance does that really well. Before we move on to our next film, I wanted to read something out from Schmoville. We asked Schmoville about their favorite Spielberg movies, and Rachel J. Cushing says, though E.T. is usually the alien movie that people proclaim their love for, I've always adored Close Encounters. I must have seen at least parts of it when I was really little, because I have a very distinct memory of Roy Neary playing with his mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
When I got older, I came to really appreciate the message message, the music, those five notes, and the fact that Francois Truffaut is in it.
That is very cool that Francois Truffaut was in the movie. Can you imagine Francois Truffaut taking direction from Steven Spielberg?
I can't.
That must have
That's
been
amazing.
A sight. Well, Darren Doctorman, resident from Schmoville, had this to say about Close Encounters. This gets very intense, so I'm going to adopt the William Shatner method in saying this.
Okay.
It's not about UFOs. It's about the process of making the decision to lead a creative life and listening to the little voice inside of you. All the people who were called had this creative spark, and they journeyed to a faraway place, facing dangers both false and real, and the ones who made it succeeded in reaching enlightenment. Were thought of as crazies, that is why I love this film, because it is my story too. Thank you, Darren Doctorman.
Well, a lot of people on Schmoville were saying that Jurassic Park is actually their favorite, which didn't make our Fast Five. Rokan says, I feel like it was made for my generation because I was born in 94 and I grew up the VHS tapes of The First and Lost World all around the house. And just today I bought the Blu-ray trilogy set. We wanted to give a bit of a shout out to Jurassic Park in our segment, which we're calling... The Right Stuff.
The Right Stuff.
It's our favorite scenes from any Spielberg movies. Mine comes from Jurassic Park. Scott, it is the moment when the water ripples in
great
the car.
Scene. Great scene.
Because similar to Jaws, which is my personal favorite Spielberg movie, what you don't see is often scarier than what you do. It had great special effects, great CGI in that movie, but for me, that was the scariest moment because you saw the water ripple and you knew something huge was coming.
You're like, this is not
this
good.
Is not going to be
this
good.
This is not good. But you remember when Jurassic Park came out that summer of 93? That was a groundbreaking film. Nothing like it had ever been done. And even though Terminator 2 Judgment Day sort of ushered in the CGI era, it didn't really get off the ground like that until Jurassic Park came
out. Do you know how they came up with that water ripple scene?
No.
Spielberg was in his car. He was listening to Earth, Wind and Fire, apparently really loudly. His mirror started shaking and he thought that would be a really cool moment. So he rang up the production guys. He said, okay, I want the mirror to shake and then I want the water to ripple. The production guys were like, no worries. Then they had real trouble trying to make the water ripple in the exact way. They finally got around it by bringing out a guitar and playing it at a certain frequency, and that made the water ripple.
And it probably burst a couple of eardrums in the process, too.
It created one of the most iconic moments in any Spielberg film. And I want to give you some more trivia now.
Let's hear it.
You ready for it?
I'm here. I'm ready.
So there are two things that often appear in a Spielberg movie. One is a tracking shot, one long shot with no cuts at all. Often you don't even notice it because it's so subtle.
So subtle.
The other is the Spielberg face of wonder, which is like, and if you're listening on iTunes, just imagine that we are looking
wide-eyed with wonder,
with awe, and the camera is slowly coming towards us.
Slowly coming towards us at chest level so that the awe of wonder look is out above you.
Yeah, so that appears in many of his movies.
Well, Alicia, did you know, since we're going off on this Close Encounters, my favorite movie, Wearing the Shirt to Prove It, did you know the original title for Close Encounters was Watch the Skies?
Yeah.
And the words Watch the Skies were said twice in Close Encounters. One of them was by Daffy Duck.
Oh, yeah, that's
watch
right.
Watch the Skies!
I remember that. Well, here's one more trivia for you.
Let's
from
hear
me.
It. Mm-hmm.
Did you know that Spielberg has always wanted to make a James Bond movie?
Ooh.
And he pitched twice to make a James Bond movie. Both times he was told no by Albert R. Broccoli. The first time was because he was really young. He was just starting out and Albert said, go away, make some movies, then come back to me. So Spielberg made Schindler's List. He went back to him and now Albert said, I can't afford you now, so too bad.
If he went to Cubby Broccoli, his nickname,
yep,
and said, I want to do a Bond film, or they were talking about it, that means the Bond film that Spielberg would have directed would have been GoldenEye.
Yeah, which means it would have been a much better movie.
A better movie, definitely. Well, did you know who the voice of E.T. is?
Yeah, maybe. Tell me.
It's Deborah Winger.
Oh, that's right.
Right? It's like you were thinking about it, like, oh, wait, I know this.
Yes.
But of all people... because she wasn't credited, and then like the following year she comes out with Terms of Endearment, which was like the ultimate weepy.
Yeah.
And then people found out that the voice of E.T. was Deborah Winger. Who knew?
I think I remember hearing that she smoked a lot of cigarettes to get that voice
as
well.
She did.
All right, let's go back to our Fast Five with our fourth favorite Spielberg movie. This one is a tough one.
This one's a doozy.
Schindler's List.
This is Schindler's List.
Ooh, just wow. Hearing that music makes me sad.
This is a tough movie to watch. It was obviously also a tough movie to make. Released on December 17th, 1993, just 6 months after Jurassic Park came out. Very interesting that Spielberg would periodically do two movies a year. One, the popcorn movie that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. One, the serious movie. It happened again in 2005. That summer, he did War of the Worlds. And then 5 months later, Munich. But listen, no one expected Schindler's List to come out of Steven Spielberg. He had done serious movies before, like The Color Purple,
yeah,
like Empire of the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
But with Schindler's List, Spielberg really topped himself with a powerful, unflinching movie, disturbing, upsetting. It was his first message movie, that message being, this can never happen again.
3 hours, 14 minutes.
Wow.
Oh, but it is still really interesting to watch. I feel like a lot of people don't want to watch it because of how harrowing it is, but I feel like it's a very important film. Obviously, as you said, a very personal film to Spielberg. He took no money from making this movie. He donated it all to a Jewish charity.
The Shoah Foundation.
Yeah, and originally Martin Scorsese was supposed to direct this.
Oh, I could not imagine. When you see a movie like Schindler's List and you see how just perfect it came out,
yeah,
you can't imagine another filmmaker doing it.
The black and white and the handheld camera, he wanted to create this whole documentary feel.
Feels like it.
He said that it was really hard for him to work on, and I heard that Robin Williams used to call him to give him a bit of humor, lighten the mood a little.
Well, another thing he did to lighten the mood, at the end of the day, he would watch reruns, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Of Seinfeld.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that crazy?
And then Seinfeld referenced Schindler's List of their episodes, so it all comes full circle. But those moments, like the little girl in the red coat, the symbolism in that movie is incredible.
And just the Jews being just taken out of their homes and their belongings taken away.
That scene with Ralph Fiennes, 7 Oscars it won, including Best Picture and Best Director.
Was shot in 75 days for a budget of $23 million. Spielberg took nothing.
Amazing.
And to this day, whenever people come up to Spielberg with memorabilia from Schindler's List, whether it's a DVD or a movie poster, he will not sign it.
Really?
Yep. He's just like, listen, this is a very personal film, and you just got to just watch the movie, and that is it.
Well, Schmovel also agree with us that Schindler's List is one of the best movies Spielberg has made. Cody Bradley says the standout is Ralph Fiennes, one of the greatest villains of all time. And I love Spielberg's justification for Goethe being almost one-dimensional. There is no understanding that kind of evil. Just a lot of depth, a battle that's raging between them without either one letting the other know what he's thinking. Brilliant.
I got to say, though, that Ralph Fiennes to this day, still a little scared of him.
After that and Voldemort.
Yeah.
He's like, really scary.
Watching Grand Budapest Hotel, great movie, by the way.
Yeah.
I was like, that's the guy from Schindler's List.
Exactly.
Well, Matt Wright from Schmoville had this to say about Schindler's List. It's brilliant filmmaking. There is not one aspect that still doesn't hold up to this day. May not have had been innovative in forwarding cinema like Indiana Jones or E.T. with its effects, but it did show that people will go see a black and white movie.
Mm-hmm.
This film seems to have been forgotten in the later years. Ironic, since the story should not be forgotten.
Spielberg makes unforgettable movies. And you know what? Should we try our special guest now?
Let's try our special guest now.
Okay, Jete,
shall we?
Let's try and see if we can get her on the phone. Okay. And we'll reveal who.
We're not going to reveal who it is yet.
Wait for her. Do you want to answer? Would you answer?
Yeah. Hello,
is this Dee Wallace?
It is.
Yay!
You are on the line.
How are you guys?
Oh, we are so happy to be talking with you. You're on with Alicia Malone.
Hi.
How are you? And Scott Mintz.
Oh,
we're so happy to be here to be talking to you. This is our first episode of Profiles. We are spotlighting the man himself, Steven Spielberg. And of course, you made definitely one of his best movies ever, E.T. the Extraterrestrial. And we're so happy to be talking to you about this.
What do you mean, one of the best movies?
It is the best movie, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Even though I love Jaws. But let's go back to the beginning, because I'm really intrigued how you were cast in this movie. Because I read that Spielberg said he saw a childlike quality in you. Is that true?
That is true, actually. He called me originally to come in and audition for a film called Used Cars that he did before E.T.,
mm-hmm.
But you know, Steven, he's always thinking ahead, always looking years ahead, and he, you know, knew he was going to do E.T., and I think he kind of saved me, because I do have that kind of vulnerable quality, you know. Yeah. Blake Edwards, when I did 10, said, I could stand you up and let you kill 9 little old ladies, Dee, and they'd say it was something your mom did to you when you were little. So, yeah, that's all true.
Well, tell us about the first time you met Steven Spielberg. What was your first impression of him, and how did that evolve over the course of filming E.T.?
Well, the first time I met Steven was when I went into audition for Used Cars. Was in some tiny little office building. I think he just probably was using a room or something in around Universal Studios somewhere. And I just thought he was a really nice guy, you know, very approachable, kind of down to earth. And, yeah, I liked him. And I didn't see him again till I got an invitation to go to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Wow.
and then got the offer for E.T.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, I was in his consciousness, you know, more than he was in mine, but because he knew that there were some plans afoot that I wasn't privy to, so...
Well, that's one of the things that impresses me about Spielberg, is because he juggles so many things at once. I mean, E.T. came right after Raiders of the Lost Ark, which you mentioned, and he was also producing Poltergeist at the time. Have you been able to figure out how he manages to juggle so many things at the one time?
Probably the same way I do.
Yeah. Time management.
You know, people like us that do that, we have to love everything we do. And you're driven by the passion of your love and appreciation for everything, you know, that you're involved in. As you know, I've just came out with 2 more books and have this whole healing world that I do. I'm not only recurring on his new series, but also on Grimm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a busy time, and I think Steven, on a grander scale, you know, must experience what I do, which is getting up every morning and going, gosh, what do I get to create today?
We definitely want to ask you about those shows coming up in just a couple minutes. But before we get to that, you know, I watched E.T. again for the first time in about 12 years, because every time I see this movie, it brings me to tears and I feel like a big baby. But there's just something special about it. But what I really love about the film, among other things, is the sense of family, that the genuine sense of family that's depicted between you and Henry Thomas and Drew Barrymore and Robert McNaughton. How long into the film did you feel like you felt like a family? And how does Spielberg just get such great performances out of these kids?
Well, first of all, I think, not to sound coarse about it, but it's our job. It's our job to look like a family. It's our job to bond quickly. I certainly have no problems working or bonding with kids. I'd rather work with kids sometimes than adults. They're much more available. They come in with a lot less baggage. I'm working with a lot of children on Steven's new series. And but I think Steven, too, he just is a master at casting the right people in the right role.
Absolutely.
He captures your quality, and he sees what quality really is the character and embodies the character. And when you do that, you really don't have that far to go in bringing the character to life if you cast people who are the character. And in my case, he wanted a mom who was distracted and vulnerable and sensitive. It was the first single mother portrayed on the big screen.
No kidding, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, and so he wanted someone that people were not going to judge, that they were going to accept, that they were going to love. And that was a real important quality, this childlike kind of, oh gosh, can you help me quality that I have.
Yeah, and you're one of the only adults that you see the face of for the first part of the movie.
Yeah, large part.
And I heard that there was a cut scene where E.T. left some Reese's Pieces on your pillow because E.T. kind of had a crush on Mary. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Actually, there was a whole B storyline that went through the film about E.T. Him watching me read Peter Pan was actually a part of that whole infatuation that he had with Mary. Of course, that scene played on its own beautifully in a different context.
Mm.
Well, one of the scenes that got to me watching the film again recently, like 2 days ago,
crying on the plane.
That's a good story I got coming up. But is the scene when Mary goes into the closet and sees Elliot and E.T., and this is after they've gotten very sick. And at first, Mary is like laughing, like, "Hey, wow, that's really good." And then the horror hits her of what is going on. I mean, you played that scene brilliantly, Dee, and I just was really blown away by that scene. Yes, fantastic. But the question I have is, how long into filming E.T., at what point did you realize, wow, we are onto something really special here?
You know, never and always. Never and always. That's my answer. I knew when I read the script that the script was special, that I wanted to be a part of the message that this script took out into the world. But again, I defer to Blake Edwards, you know. He said, "Honey, if we knew what made a hit, we'd have a lot more of them."
Oh,
yeah.
Good line.
And, you can do special work in a special script and have so many talented people involved. If it doesn't come out at the right time or the atmosphere within the consciousness of the viewing public isn't ready for it, or it doesn't hit a note with him, it's not going to matter. It'll come out, it'll do big blockbuster for a week, and then it'll go away. There's so much about timing and editing and trailers and how it's released and how it pulls you in. It's a collaborative art. And when people forget that anything creative is a collaborative art, whether it's from the collaboration of you and the creator to the collaboration of everybody on a set or during a play, that's when everybody starts getting in trouble, I think.
Well, would you say that E.T. changed your life, and do people still come up to you on the street and talk about it?
Well, I would say it definitely changed my business life.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It opened up a lot of, I think that's an important discernment for us to have.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Did it change who I was? No, Dee Wallace is still Deanna Bowers from Kansas. I still like my upper middle class home in Woodland Hills. So it didn't change my integrity. It didn't change who I am in the core of me, but it certainly changed my opportunities in the business and how well I was known, you know. And yes, every day people will stop me at the store, unfortunately with no makeup on, when I haven't taken a shower, and they'll hear my voice and go, "Oh my God, you're the mom for me too."
Yay.
Well, I'm just really curious, you're filming the movie. The movie opened on June 4th, 1982, which was an incredible month for movies and science fiction. But then it just didn't just become a hit. It became a phenomenon. I mean, the Reese's Pieces and the Neil Diamond song Heartlight, it became such a phenomenon. And at what point did you realize that you and Steven and your cast and Henry Thomas and everybody were just on the cusp of something that was just even bigger than anyone could have imagined?
Oh, I think probably 2 or 3 weeks after the release.
Wow.
We knew it was going to have a lot of legs and all the press, you know, wanted to interview all of us, and that was the buzz everybody was talking about. You know, once the collective makes it a hit, you really get it.
Wow.
Everybody gets it. The whole world gets it because it shifts on an energetic level.
Mm. And now,
and I think it's such an amazing film because it tells the truth. It's all about love and keeping your heart open and getting back to, you know, the home of you. And it's our Wizard of Oz. Basically,
I totally agree with that.
Timeless and unforgettable.
And before we let you go, we want to talk about the projects you're working on right now. You're working with Spielberg again on The Whisperers. What is it like to be back with him? Has he changed?
Well, I haven't seen the dude yet.
Oh, you haven't yet. Cool.
I have not been there when he's been on set, and when they're shooting in Vancouver. So when I fly up, he's down here. So I'm looking forward to crossing paths again with him. So, yeah, I'll let you know. I'm sure he's great. I just saw him with Oprah doing his thing, you know, on their new film. So.
100-foot journey. Well, tell us about your role on The Whispers and tell us a little more about the show.
Well, I can't tell you much other than it's an intense drama.
Okay, that's good. You had me.
It involves children, and I play the grandmother of one of the beautiful kids on the show, and Lily Rabe's mother. And, signed that whole contract thing, but it's a ride, and I can tell you there are many, many questions I have as the artist doing the role that I don't have answered yet. That's how close
they're close to the vest. Wow. And you're also Alice on the TV series Grimm.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm hoping and praying that they have me back this season. I love that entire company. I love the producers and the writing and the role. And, they're just starting back up again. And these days, it's very different, you know, when back in the olden days when I was coming up and you recurred on something, you actually were put under contract. Now they hire you as a guest star as you are needed. So you're kind of out there floundering a little bit, really going, am I going to work next week? Or am I going to fly this week? It's a little disconcerting, but I just figure I'm going to go play with everybody, and the first man gets me.
Yay.
Say yes to everything.
I hope we see you again on that show. And thank you so much, Dee Wallace, for joining us. We really
so
appreciate
thrilled.
Your time.
Thank you so much. We
thank
are so
you.
Thrilled for
Thanks,
saying
guys.
Yes to
Have
us.
Have a great one.
Have
Bye-bye.
A great day. Thank you, Dee.
Bye.
Wow, that was awesome.
That's so good.
That was so
I mean,
awesome.
When I saw E.T. for the first time, I would have never thought I'd ever get to speak with Dee Wallace, the mother. I love her so much.
It's such a wonderful movie. We'll talk more about E.T. very, very shortly. But for right now, you know, we've been talking about movies that Steven Spielberg directed.
Mm-hmm.
But Steven Spielberg has an even bigger resume, if you could believe it, of movies that he has produced.
All right.
And what a great list of movies. We could be here for a whole other show
tonight,
just talking
just
about
just give
it.
Us top five.
Top five. Okay, let's just go right through it. Coming in at number five on our list of best produced Steven Spielberg movies, Gremlins.
Kim Natsok's favorite.
Is it really?
No, he has never seen that movie.
Oh, that's right. He hasn't seen Gremlins 2 either. But Gremlins came out in 84. What I love about this movie, it starts off like a distant cousin to E.T., then it gets very dark. That is Joe Dante
That's
for
weird.
You.
Yeah.
Coming out that same year is The Goonies.
Yeah.
Directed by Richard Donner. It's more of a cult, but you like The Goonies,
it's
right?
It's an adventure film.
It's
I
an
love
adventure.
It. Yeah.
You gotta love the sense of wonder. It feels very Spielbergian.
Josh Brolin, yeah.
Number three is a film that, well, just a lot of people don't even know that Spielberg produced this movie.
Yeah.
It is Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
I didn't even know that.
I mean, he produced it working with his protege, Robert Zemeckis.
Mm-hmm.
Worked with him a bunch of times. But this was a groundbreaking, trailblazing mix of live action and animation.
I still want to be Jessica Rabbit.
You could easily
I'm trying.
Be Jessica Rabbit. Only if I get to be Roger.
All right.
Number two, a movie that Spielberg produced feels an awful lot like he might have directed it.
That's the rumor.
And some say that he has directed it, is Poltergeist. Came out in 1982 on June 4th, 1982.
You're the Rain Man of release dates.
1 week, by the way, before E.T. This feels like a Spielberg-directed movie.
Here.
It's got the magic. They're here. And it's scary. But even the score by Jerry Goldsmith sounds like John Williams. And number one, best Spielberg produced movie, it's got to be
Back to the Future.
Great Scott.
Yes.
It's heavy. Whoa, that's a word again. Is there something wrong with the Earth's gravitational pull in the year 1985? Oh.
Love it. Love that movie. Such a great adventure.
Well, that brings us to our next segment, which we like to call...
Oh, yeah. Quiz show. So, you know, on the Schmoes Know movie show that we have the ultimate Schmodown, the trivia contest. You know that I'm terrible at trivia, but we know that you guys love trivia. So we decided we would be nice to each other. We're just going to ask one question each. Multiple choice.
Multiple choice.
So it's not as stressful as the last time, but let's see how we go. Jete, I believe you have the Jeopardy music for... Oh, yes.
Okay.
All right, I'll go first. Okay, Scott Mantz.
Yes, Alicia Malone.
Which Spielberg film led to the creation of the PG-13 rating system? Is it Back to the Future, or Poltergeist, or Gremlins, or Twilight Zone, the movie?
I'm going to go with, are you ready for this, Alicia Malone?
Yes.
I'm going to say Gremlins.
Correct.
Because that movie came out the same summer as another movie that also had a big, big role in the creation of the PG-13 rating.
What was that?
This was a movie that Spielberg directed, in addition to Gremlins, which he produced, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
You always have the facts. Okay, let's see how I go.
Come on. Okay, my turn. My question for you, Alicia Malone.
Yes.
You can tweet her at Alicia Malone. Which of the following actors, Alicia Malone, was not, I repeat, not originally considered for the role of Indiana Jones?
Okay.
Is it Jeff Bridges?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Sam Neill?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Jack Nicholson?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it, well, Tom Selleck?
Okay, not considered, you're
not
saying.
Not considered.
Okay, so I definitely know that Tom Selleck was considered.
That was a given.
That was a given. I'm not sure about the others, so I'm just going to say one that I can never imagine playing Indiana Jones.
Let's hear it.
Jack Nicholson.
She's right!
Yay!
She wins! Okay.
So I am only good if you give me multiple choice. That's what we have decided. But Schmovel, if you have any questions for us you'd like us to answer, or if you want to us to give you maybe a quiz question, we might do that. We've got a brand new Facebook page.
Yes, we do. Why don't you tell us about our Facebook page,
it's
Alicia?
Profiles with Malone and Mantz on the Schmoes Know Network. Just rolls right off the tongue.
Rolls
and
right
make
off
sure
the tongue.
You give it a like. We'll be chatting to you about Spielberg, about next week's show. And also, if you are watching this right now on YouTube, on Schmoes Know Podcast, make sure that you subscribe to the channel and also subscribe to iTunes.
Subscribe to Profiles on iTunes. And ladies and gentlemen, this is really, really crucial. No matter where you are watching Profiles right now, whether you're listening to it, watching it, hearing it, we don't care. It is very important. Please go to the iTunes page and rate us. Rate Profiles.
Give us a little review.
Give us comments. Give us reviews. We could take it. We could dish it, right?
Yeah, that's
we
right. Hopefully you give us some nice reviews. But if you want to see us on the air, this is really important because this is the way that iTunes decides what's popular and what's not. And if we're popular, then we will continue.
You get to come back next week.
All right. So are you ready to continue with Fast Five?
Moving on with Fast Five.
With
coming in at number three.
One of my favorite Spielberg films. Jete, do you have the theme song?
That music.
Yeah.
Wait. Here's the shark.
Here comes Bruce. It is Jaws. Now, Scott, this is one of my favorite Spielberg films because of the fear that it still gives me.
Oh, yeah.
As I said with Jurassic Park, similar to Hitchcock, it is what's unseen, what's lurking below the water is a lot scarier than what you do see. And like Psycho, it also made me go scared to go in the water.
Yes.
Psycho, I didn't want to go into the showers. Jaws, I didn't want to go into the water. Spielberg says that he still has nightmares about making Jaws because he was 27. He was in over his head. They were writing the script the night before they were shooting it. They had no idea if it was going to work or not. Bruce the mechanical shark kept failing, and that's what led to that great point of view shot from the shark with the camera in the box, and that makes the film so timeless and still scary because you don't see the shark.
You don't see the shark, and this was a ploy that even though it was an accident that this happened while making Jaws, it was a technique that worked very, very well in other films like Alien, like Godzilla, which came out this year.
Yeah.
They waited till the end to see the monster. But this was a technique that Well, now, do you know why the shark's name was Bruce?
No.
It was the name of Spielberg's attorney.
Oh, it's also the name of my dad.
Oh, so well, yeah. There you go.
It also is the first ever summer blockbuster. Why is it called that?
It is called a blockbuster because people would line around the block and they would keep wrapping around to the point where the block would break. Another thing about Jaws, this was the first movie ever to make more than $100 million at the box office.
Wow.
Topped out in its original release at $260 million. And a lot of people say, including Spielberg himself, that the fact that Bruce didn't work and you couldn't see the shark, and it made it so much scarier,
mm-hmm.
that added another $150 million to that box office.
Well, because before Jaws, summer was really a dumping ground for the studios. It was where they put films that they didn't think anyone would watch. After Jaws, and now we see it, it
all
is
the
all the summer blockbusters.
It's all about the summer blockbusters.
And now, actually, if you listen to the movie news, which you should catch up with on schmoesknow.com every day, you'll know that summer is actually being extended. April, March.
Now it's April because of Captain America the Winter Soldier.
But back in Jaws Day, that was a new thing to come out in summer. Schmoville also really loves Jaws. Joshua Willingham says, you practically go the whole movie without seeing the shark. The people are in its element. The humans are outmatched. It's the ultimate tale of survival to end an opposing threat. I love that.
Well, Keith Richmond from Schmoville had this to say about Jaws. Jaws appeals to me on every level. It is rare to find a film that is equal parts scary, funny, exciting, and charming. The acting was amazing, and to this day, whenever this movie's on TV, I still have to watch it. And yes, I am still scared to swim in the ocean. Thank you, Harkness Keith Richmond. I actually went to college with this guy.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Well, don't go to Australia then, because Australia, everything will kill you, including the sharks.
Lots of sharks in Australia.
But that theme song, too, has just become one of the most iconic.
And that's just one of many. I mean, we could just do a whole other show just on the collaboration between Spielberg and John Williams.
He's brilliant. I really want to see John Williams when he comes to the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh, that'll be fun. It's at the end of the month.
Yeah. Well, Spielberg has made so many movies that we want to give a shout out to some in a segment we're calling
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And what is this segment about?
So the good means the underrated movies. The bad, the overrated movies. And the ugly,
just plain awful.
Awful movies, which is hard to do with Spielberg. But
what is your underrated movie?
Okay, I'll kick it off. My underrated movie is Munich.
Munich, I'm down with that.
I really love the level of tension in this movie, and I also like how it shows that revenge doesn't solve any problems. The circle of violence. And Eric Bana, if you grew up in Australia, you'd know him as a sketch comedy artist.
What?
Yeah, he used to have this character called Poyter. Like Peter with a really Australian accent, Peter, and he would do all this crazy stuff. And then you see him in Munich, and he is such a good dramatic actor. What's
Never would have picked him for a comedic actor, but my underrated film, I could have gone easily with Munich. I could go with Empire of the Sun, but I'm really going to go with a film that is truly underrated and misunderstood, AI, Artificial Intelligence.
Yeah,
came
Kubrick.
Out in June of 2001, and this was sort of a collaboration with Steven Spielberg and the late, great Stanley Kubrick. What makes this movie so fascinating is if you know Spielberg's warm sensibility and you know Kubrick's cold sensibility, the movie does not walk a fine line between the two. It veers back and forth. It is an uneven, fascinating movie, and that is why that is my underrated. What about your overrated,
okay.
Alicia?
I feel really bad saying this, but it's War Horse.
Oh, I liked War Horse.
Oh, I love horses, and I know the story is great. It comes from a play. It's really well done. I can see it's beautifully shot. It's great cinematography, a beautiful score, but to me, it's just really sappy and sentimental and melodramatic, so I didn't like that.
Well, my overrated film, I hate to say this.
Yeah, this is a bad one.
I really hate to say this, but my overrated Spielberg movie is Lincoln.
Yeah.
Listen, it just felt like a history lesson. And but the problem as a film that I had with it is it just felt too confined. It felt like a play. You never really saw what Lincoln was trying to stop until a year later when you saw 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
12 Years a Slave had come out the same year as Lincoln. Lincoln probably would have had a better shot of winning Best Picture because they really wanted it to. Well, that brings us to our awful,
yes.
Our ugly, and on 3, 2, 1,
1941.
You know, it's actually not the worst movie I've ever seen, but for this film to have come out sandwiched in between Close Encounters and Raiders of the Lost Ark, it just pales in comparison to those movies. But that's okay. If you have a good, bad, ugly film about Steven Spielberg, you want to shoot us a tweet at Alicia Malone and at Movie Mance. Let us know what you think, or go on our fan page at the profiles with Malone and Mance on the Schmoes Network and let us know what you think the good, the bad, the ugly is for Steven Spielberg.
Well, a lot of Schmoville was saying that their favorite Spielberg movie is Saving Private Ryan. Now, Cody Bradley says, most war films make combat appealing, but Saving Private Ryan makes it terrifyingly real. In fact, it was the film that got me interested in movies. The experience from watching it for the first few times never left me. I agree. That is an incredible film.
Well, Jer Silvera says, Alicia, you have to mention Saving Private Ryan. Not only you and Mance have to talk about the film overall, but you both need to discuss the opening war scene that is beautifully shot in the beginning.
Oh.
Hear, hear on that.
Yeah, that opening scene really puts you in that war, and it just makes it horrifying.
It is horrifying. And you know what? You could have just had those 25 minutes alone and had nothing after that. Saving Private Ryan still would have been a masterpiece movie.
Now, I said before that my favorite scene from any Spielberg movie was from Jurassic Park. Now it's time for yours, for
my
your
turn.
Right stuff.
Okay.
What is it?
My right stuff, again, shocker, it always comes back to Close Encounters. My right stuff goes to the scene in Close Encounters when Roy Neary is at the railroad crossing.
Yep.
And he has his first close encounter.
Yep.
Of the first kind. So what I love about the scene is the setup.
Yeah.
He's lost. He's driving around, comes to a stoplight, and he's looking at his map, and this car comes up behind him, and he's just like, yeah, go ahead. The car goes past him and says, you're in the middle of the road, jackass. He goes, tell me where cornbread is, turkey. So he keeps driving down the road. He comes to the railroad crossing. There's another light that comes up behind him.
Looks identical.
It looks identical, but it comes up really close, and he's like looking in the mirror like, yeah, go ahead. The light rises, and you're like, whoa. And then all of a sudden, everything stops. The mailbox starts shaking. The light shines down on the truck. He's terrified. All hell breaks loose in the truck, and the railroad thing starts going back and forth, and then it all stops. And then Richard Dreyfuss just was like looking, peering past his windshield, and he sees the spacecraft. He sees the UFO, and that's when he knows to go to Devil's Tower.
Yay! Well, let's keep going with our Fast Five. We're up to number two. This also has a great theme song, Jete. Yeah! Raiders of the Lost Ark! I love this movie. Just hearing that theme song brings back that sense of adventure. Jete, I know that's one of your favorite movies too. Tell us, why do you love Raiders of the Lost Ark?
You know, it's funny. I love the first one, but for some reason, like, Temple of Doom is one that I always remember growing up. That's the one with the bridge and the whole bridge scene with the alligators. So that's one that sticks in my mind. But as I got older, you kind of realize the first one really is the best one.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, Harrison Ford, everyone thinks he's Han Solo. For me, he's Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Temple of Doom is an underrated film. A lot of people thought it was a little too dark. But Raiders of the Lost Ark is just the creation of one of the greatest movie heroes of all time.
Mm-hmm.
The movie opened on June 14th, 1981. And Spielberg and Lucas, George Lucas, his pal, and who also produced the movie and co-wrote the screenplay with Lawrence Kasdan, they were big fans of the movie serials of the 30s and the 40s.
Yeah, and I hear that the story goes that the two were in Hawaii.
Yep.
Spielberg was having a vacation after Close Encounters, and Lucas was having a vacation to try to escape the madness of Star Wars. Spielberg was telling Lucas how he really wanted to make a James Bond movie. Lucas said, I've got a character that is better than Bond, and it became Indiana Jones.
It's amazing, too, because Indiana Jones, his weapon is not a gun, it's a whip.
Yeah.
And the other thing is about Raiders of the Lost Ark, and this is another thing I really love about the film, is that for the first time, and one of the only times in Harrison Ford's film career, he had an equal.
Mm-hmm.
Marion Ravenwood, played by Karen Allen, was such a strong character. She was such a strong character.
Yes, great. Held
her own
character
with Harrison Ford in that movie.
Yeah.
His best female co-star, I think.
And Schmoville also loved Raiders of the Lost Ark. Ryan Peters says it very simply and very well. It's the perfect blend of action, romance, and humor.
Absolutely agree with that. You can let us know what you think. Shoot us some Twitter responses to Alicia Malone or to me at Movie Mance. Let us know what you thought of Raiders of the Lost Ark as your favorite Spielberg movie. And boy, what a score. Again, with John Williams and the scores.
Again, what a score. And Spielberg, he's so influential. I think there's a couple of filmmakers where you can definitely tell he's had his influence on. And he's also mentored a lot of filmmakers. So in a scene, in a segment we're calling Adaptation.
Adaptation.
We're going to run through some filmmakers that you might like to try or you might agree with us are very similar to Spielberg. So first up, let's talk about J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams. All you have to do is watch the movie Super 8. That is a love letter to Steven Spielberg. It didn't hurt that Spielberg actually produced the movie for J.J. Abrams. That movie is a cross between Close Encounters and E.T. and it really feels like it. It feels like it just a homage to Spielberg's movies. And but even if you watch J.J.'s other films, I mean, what he did with Star Trek has some of Spielberg magic to it. Of course, a lot of the shows that J.J. Abrams has produced over the years.
Yeah, he likes light too, like Spielberg.
The lens flares, the use of light. Yes.
Another filmmaker is one we mentioned before, Robert Zemeckis. Now, of course, Spielberg produced many of his movies and he was a mentor to him. And I think you can notice his influence with the sense of magic that Zemeckis puts to his movies.
Definitely. And one of Spielberg's first movie as a producer was also Zemeckis' first movie as a director, 1978. The movie was called I Want to Hold Your Hand. And full disclosure here, folks, I am obsessed with the Beatles. And I have to tell you this about I Want to Hold Your Hand. It is about these kids who try to break into the Ed Sullivan Show to watch the Beatles during their first U.S. visit. And it is funny. It is charming. Totally irresistible. You got to go see I Want to Hold Your Hand.
All right, I'll trust you on that one. Peter Jackson is our third filmmaker that we chose. Of course, Peter and Steven worked together on The Adventures of Tintin. Spielberg was a big fan of Peter Jackson. Peter Jackson also was a big fan of Spielberg. You can see that influence with the monster movies and the sense of adventure. And also, I love this quote from Spielberg in an interview. He says, I sponsored Robert Zemeckis and he sponsored Peter Jackson with The Frighteners. We all had a hand in pulling each other up in life, which I think is so sweet.
That is very awesome. By the way, remember at Comic-Con a couple years ago when they were doing the press line for Tintin?
Oh,
we got to interview together. You and I got to interview Steven Spielberg and Peter Jackson. I got to tell you, I've done so many interviews over the years with Access Hollywood. I know you've done tons of interviews with every single outlet you've worked with. And that is a lot, ladies and gentlemen. This woman is the hardest working woman in show business.
Yeah.
Kid you not. But talking to Steven Spielberg and Peter Jackson together, I was a little nervous, totally starstruck, in awe, and felt like a little kid. It was awesome.
Well, we are quickly running out of time. There is just so much to talk about when it comes to Spielberg. So we just want to quickly mention our Fast Five number one movie, our favorite movie of Steven Spielberg, is one we were talking about before, E.T.
E.T.
Just bring back those, that music brings back the memories. I love the way this film is shot from kid height. It really puts you in the mind of Elliot. It reminds you of childhood, how frustrating it was when no one would listen to you, no one would believe you, coming from the single mother home, like she said. You know, this very, very relatable story. Some scary moments, but some really touching ones, and I love E.T.
You know, for Dee Wallace to call E.T. the Wizard of Oz of its day, right on the money. This is a fairy tale. It's timeless. I love the relationship between Elliot and E.T. They are both have this childlike sensibility. There's so many sentimental, intimate, genuinely moving moments during this movie.
Mm.
And I got to tell you, I saw the movie five times in the summer of 1982 when it came out.
Yeah.
And every time I cried, stepped away from it for 20 years, didn't watch it again until the re-release in 2002. I figured, I'm a grown man. I can handle E.T. now. Bring it on. Watching the film, I got so emotional that I was crying and I was wiping my eyes and my contact lens came right off. Then just 2 days ago, watched it again. I'm thinking, okay, I'm over 40 now. I can handle E.T. Sitting on an airplane watching E.T., crying my eyes out.
Gosh.
And the woman next to me is like, are you okay? And I'm like, there's something in my eye.
It's got such a great script by Melissa Matheson. Great performances. That first started my love with Spielberg and my love with Drew Barrymore. Now we're getting the wind up. Unfortunately,
our
first profiles is done. I feel like Spielberg, we could go for the full Lincoln. We could go for the full Schindler's List time.
Yeah, we could
talk for 3 hours about Spielberg, but unfortunately, we have to go go from the studio because there's other people coming in. So, some points to mention before we go. Make sure you subscribe to this YouTube channel, Schmozno Podcast, and subscribe to iTunes. Give us a rating and review. Don't forget to visit schmozno.com every day for the latest movie news. Before we go, Scott, let's announce who we'll be talking about next week. Shate, think?
Yay! Oh, that's all you gotta hear. Our next profiles, we're going big, we're going bold. We are going with the late, great Stanley Kubrick.
I cannot wait for that. So make sure you like our Facebook page because we'll be talking to you about your favorite Kubrick movies. So it's time to go. We did it.
We did it. First episode of Profiles with Malone and Mance. Woo. In the can. We did it. We got this down. Can't wait to come back next time, talk Stanley Kubrick, and the time after that, the time after that. And hey, you know what? If you have any filmmakers that you love, that you would love for us to talk about, please go to our fan page on Facebook and please tweet us at Alicia Malone and Movie Mance and let us know your favorite filmmakers because we might just use them on our show.
Until next time, Schmoville, we'll be right here.
From producers Christian Harloff, Mark Ellis, and the entire Schmozno Network crew, we would like to thank you for listening to Profiles with Alicia Malone and Scott Mant. Special thanks to Kevin Undergaro and Maria Menounos, the author of Every Girl's Guide to Diet and Fitness, in stores now. Be sure to subscribe to Profiles on iTunes and rate and review the show. To get other Schmozno Network episodes, movie news, and join the conversation, be sure to visit schmozno.com. I'm the Pit Boss, and this has been a presentation of the Schmozno Network.